This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Thinking about having kids is something a lot of us start doing in our 20s, right? And for those who want to start that chapter, finding out you're pregnant can be one of the most joyous moments. Often, couples will wait 12 weeks to announce a pregnancy. It's become a bit of a social norm here in Australia because the risk of miscarriage is higher during the early stages. But that means the experience of pregnancy loss can be shrouded in secrecy. It can be a really isolating experience for a lot of people. And what we're learning from some Australia First research today is that it also could be a more common experience than we previously thought. I'm Angel Parsons, I'm filling in for Dave Marchese, and coming up on Hack, we hear your experiences of pregnancy loss.
If you're listening and you've had a miscarriage, you're having a miscarriage, you're trying for a baby, anything like that, your loss matters.
We'll also be getting some advice around how you can support someone if they're going through pregnancy loss. Like if you're a partner, this can have a real impact on you too. If you or your partner has gone through this, let me know what helped you through it. You can text in during the show on 0439 757 555. We'll be talking about that soon. Also coming up, are the Commonwealth Games still relevant? Australia is dominating over in Glasgow right now, but what does the future of the Games look like? First, though,
this is Hack.
The next few days in Spain and France will be critical as conditions worsen in fire-affected areas and temperatures across Europe rise.
On Triple J.
Massive wildfires have been burning through parts of Europe. People have lost their lives. Hundreds of thousands of people have been forced to evacuate their homes. It's impacting some tourist areas too. And it's prompted some strong statements linking the events to climate change. Reporter Alice Angeloni has been keeping across this story for us.
The scale of these fires is what hits you most.
The fire is big. It's like David against Goliath.
Over a quarter of a million people have fled areas under threat.
These flames could take months to be extinguished.
Wildfires are raging across France, Spain, and other parts of Europe. Several people have died and hundreds of thousands of people have been forced to evacuate. Spain has declared a civil national emergency while the French Prime Minister has called it unprecedented. So what's going on?
In southwest France, a wildfire remains on the edge of the historic city of Bordeaux as 2,000 firefighters battle to keep the blazes under control.
Record-breaking heat waves and long dry spells have created a perfect storm for fires across Europe.
It's very difficult for the firemen to fight the fire because the wind is very strong.
That's Eric Bricardi from France's National Firefighters Federation, where fires have burned through roughly 42,000 hectares.
We saw miles and miles of forest land completely scorched, the earth beneath still smoking from the intense heat.
Crews have been working to contain the fires, but conditions are expected to worsen, with another heat wave forecast over the coming days.
But the fear is that as the heat wave warning continues to set in, and as we see rising temperatures over the coming days, that this may lead to further fires.
It's likely more people will be urged to evacuate, especially as the fire creeps closer to Bordeaux. Australian Blair Connor runs a pub there.
I feel like everyone's sort of got their emergency evacuation bag packed and ready for a call at any moment to sort of to leave. So we'll wait and see for the next 2 days what's going to happen.
Blair says it's a tense time.
Problem is, at the moment, everything's just so dry. Everyone's sort of on a knife's edge. You feel as if a fire could pop up anywhere. There's so much forest and stuff around that's just ready to go.
Across the border, Spain has been in the grips of a similar situation where it's still looking critical west of Madrid. The Spanish government declared a national emergency for the first time last week, with about 70,000 people forced to flee from villages west of Madrid. Spanish authorities are reporting the death toll as 14, but some evacuation orders have now been lifted, with thousands of people returning home to towns ravaged by fire. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has linked the current emergency directly to climate change, while describing climate change denial as the worst kind of fuel.
In any case, what is certainly true is that the climate emergency, this sustained and systematic increase in temperatures that we're seeing every year, is exponentially driving up the spread and intensity of the fires we are suffering.
Tourists have been caught up in it all too. Smart Traveller, run by the Australian government, is warning Aussie tourists of large-scale evacuations and travel disruptions. Smart Traveller says destinations like Greece, Italy, Portugal, Albania and parts of the Balkans are at risk too as extreme summer heat continues.
To what extent have meteorological conditions impacted the wildfires in Spain? Hugely, absolutely hugely. You know, we've had heat wave after heat wave after heat wave.
That's meteorologist Claire Nullis, who says it's clear that changing climate is having an impact. While the United Nations released a statement yesterday saying the climate alarm is blaring from every direction as humanity takes too long to move away from fossil fuels.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni reporting there. A scary situation, and one we'll be keeping you across here on Hack. For now, we are going to move on, and I do just want to give you a heads up. In this next story, we are going to be talking about pregnancy loss and miscarriage.
This is Hack.
We should be normalising this discussion. I think there are so many people that suffer in silence.
On Triple J.
Have you ever had a miscarriage or pregnancy loss? If so, your experience could be more common than we'd previously thought. Today, the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare released Australia's first ever official data on pregnancy loss. This can be a devastating and isolating experience. If you or your partner has gone through this, what helped you through? I'd love to hear from you on 0439 757 555. Because while this experience is fairly common, young people who suffer losses can be particularly disadvantaged as their experiences are often dismissed or minimised. Reporter Shalila Medora has this story.
It was a whole different level of pain, and I actually collapsed to the floor.
Laura Baxter was 24 and on the contraceptive pill when she had sudden, extreme pain and bleeding.
I don't know why I didn't seek medical help at that time. I think I just sort of gaslit myself a little bit and was like, oh, it's endometriosis, I'll be fine.
Eventually, Laura got in to see her GP.
Straight away, she said, okay, so you've had a miscarriage. We know this because we found, and I quote, retained products of conception. I know you're taking the birth control pill, so just have a break, have a bleed, and everything will be fine.
Laura went into shock. She didn't even know she was pregnant in the first place.
Going back to that time, I can still hear the ringing in my ears that I had while I'm trying to listen to the doctor speak. And I got a little bit upset. I started to cry a little bit. And she sort of looked at me and she said, oh, I suppose this is a little bit of a loss in a way.
Laura says her GP didn't give her any referrals to support services and treated the whole thing as kind of routine.
Her responses became very centred around the fact that it shouldn't affect your fertility, you should be fine. You know, you can just get pregnant again and this is just a thing that happens.
It made Laura feel like maybe she shouldn't be feeling so sad about this.
From that experience with my GP, I felt like I shouldn't be grieving, that I should just move on.
It doesn't matter whether you're 25 or 35, it's an awful thing to have to navigate. And certainly that dismissal can compound the grief that you feel.
Isabel Odeberg is the co-founder and head of the Early Pregnancy Loss Coalition. She says young people can have a very different experience of pregnancy loss than older people.
When you're younger and a medical professional sees you as not necessarily being at the end of your reproductive journey, they tend to be even more dismissive. Oh, don't worry about it. You're only X years old. You know, you've still got heaps of time.
They often don't have anyone their own age who's gone through it, something Laura experienced as well.
I didn't have any friends at that time or family that had had miscarriages, so I didn't have anyone to talk to from that personal level.
Here's the thing. New data out today has confirmed that pregnancy loss may be more common than we previously thought. The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare put out a national first scoping study, which found that almost one in three women who'd given birth in 2022 had experienced pregnancy loss.
So previously it's been around the 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 is sort of the two numbers that get thrown around a lot.
But Izzy says today's data might be just the start.
But actually the indication is that it's higher, because the only people that responded to that question are the people that then went on to have children.
There's still no solid data on the age or geographic breakdown of people who've had miscarriages, and more research is needed.
There is a lot more work to be done. This is a scoping study, but this is just an amazingly important first step.
It wasn't until, you know, I was 29 when I had my first conversation about miscarriage, because a good girlfriend of mine had gone through that and it was awful.
WA TV personality Alex Crisp wishes she'd known more about miscarriage before she'd experienced her own loss.
It's hard to explain grieving something or somebody that you've never actually met, but you had planned your life around.
So she decided to post publicly about her experience.
The reaction to my post was quite overwhelming in a positive way.
Alex's post got heaps of traction. She was getting messages from people from all over the world who wanted to share their own experiences or just send her some love.
There's something really I find comforting in sharing hurt and pain. It's a relatable experience.
She thinks young people's openness on social media and this generation's willingness to confront trauma will create lasting change.
You know, social media can absolutely open the door for that kind of conversation for people who feel like they don't have that in their life.
Hack on Triple J.
And a thank you to Shalila Medora for that story there. And yeah, this can be such a hard time, as we've been hearing. So if you'd like some support around this, if you need to talk to someone, help is available through Red Nose Australia. You can call them on 1300 308 307 or there's pinkelephants.org.au. Hearing your experiences on the text line, Jesse in Brisbane says, I suffered in silence through 3 miscarriages. My now ex-husband was unempathetic and disinterested. Thankfully, I had my mum who had experienced it too. We've also got Daniel saying, my wife lost a baby at 24 weeks and it continues to impact her and our family to this day. Look, what can you do if someone you love is experiencing this, or if you yourself have lost a pregnancy? Because as we're hearing, it can be a pretty silent, isolating experience for women and their partners too. So we're going to put some of these questions to someone who has these kinds of conversations a lot. Claire Bellhouse is a clinical psychologist who specialises in perinatal mental health, and she's with us now. Claire, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
In your work, do you see women carrying, I don't know, a lot of shame around this? Like, what are some of the feelings that can come up, some of the psychological or mental impacts of pregnancy loss?
I'd say the most prominent feelings and impacts that I see are obviously grief and loss, but also feelings of isolation, and I'd say guilt and self-blame probably more than shame. Especially when women don't have answers, which is most commonly the case as to why they've miscarried. And a lot of women can be looking for answers and blaming themselves. And I think that can lead to a lot of guilt. And I think, you know, it can lead to more severe mental health issues like depression and anxiety. And particularly if people are trying for pregnancies again, that can be really stressful.
One of the women that Shalila spoke to talked about this feeling of grieving someone she'd never even met, and that was a really difficult thing to come to terms with. Can you talk about, like, can this be a really confusing kind of grief?
Yeah, I think it can be confusing. It can also be a really profound kind of grief. There's actually a term from a therapist called Pauline Boss that is called ambiguous loss, and it refers to this type of loss where it's not as concrete and obvious as a person that everyone knows well that we lose. And it's a type of grief and loss that's much more difficult sometimes to process and for other people to understand.
And how much does language matter here from healthcare providers in terms of, you know, giving validation or alternatively adding to this kind of culture of silence that we know surrounds pregnancy loss?
So I think it has a huge impact. And I think the number one thing that, you know, women in a lot of our research have spoken about and what I see clinically, the number one thing that they really want from healthcare providers and from the people around them is acknowledgement of the loss, and that it is valid and that it is a real loss. And I think when healthcare providers or anyone really is dismissive or minimising or doesn't acknowledge that loss, it can be really distressing.
You were part of a study a few years ago looking at the role of social networks and friendships for women after experiencing loss. Can you tell me more about that? Like, how important are your friends and family at a time like this?
I mean, I think it's one of those things that really depends on the person experiencing the loss. But generally speaking, friends and family can be really important and really significant in terms of providing support for women. Women also often speak about finding it difficult to talk to friends and family about pregnancy loss, particularly given there is this culture of silence around miscarriage, which most commonly occurs in the first trimester when there's kind of an unwritten rule in our society that you don't necessarily speak about being pregnant until you're past the first trimester. So often people don't even know that women are pregnant before they have a miscarriage, which can make it really difficult to talk to people about.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to hear you bring this up about how a lot of couples want to wait 12 weeks before announcing their pregnancy. We actually have Sam on the line. Sam, thank you so much for speaking with us. You experienced a miscarriage within the first 12 weeks, is that right?
Pregnant at the time.
Oh, sorry, Sam. We just missed that out. Could you just repeat yourself? I'm so sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry,
no, that's
Sam.
Okay.
Tell us about your experience.
Yeah, I was 10 weeks pregnant at the time I experienced my miscarriage.
And had you decided that you wouldn't tell anyone until those 12 weeks had passed? What were your thoughts going into it?
Yeah, our sort of closest friends and family knew, but that was sort of it. We hadn't kind of told, like, work or anything like that. So it was sort of, yeah, hard to, I guess, go through that and keep sort of going through the motions after that happened in sort of like the wider community. Yeah.
So can you kind of understand why this has become a bit of a social norm, or do you think it could be actually contributing to how isolating the whole experience can be?
Oh, it absolutely contributes to it. I work as a midwife, and so I see women every day who have experienced miscarriage and pregnancy loss. And you speak to women, like particularly ones who are having their first baby, and they always say that it's their first baby but not their first pregnancy. Like, women want to acknowledge these pregnancies. They want to acknowledge that these babies existed, and I think we don't see that enough from healthcare professionals and just the wider community. Yeah, I think it's really important to kind of break that stigma of waiting till 12 weeks, because this happens to so many women and we deserve to have those stories heard.
Sam, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experience with us. We really appreciate it. This is Hack. I'm Angel Parsons and I'm speaking with clinical psychologist Claire Bellhouse. Claire, picking up on some of the things Sam said there, I'm curious to hear how you think this, you know, waiting 12 weeks might be contributing to some of the problems that we're talking about.
I think it definitely contributes to the silence around miscarriage and of isolation. And certainly in the research that we did, almost all women we spoke to said that they didn't really understand the 12-week rule and that they found it really unhelpful. And in future, they would or had told people earlier that they were pregnant because they wanted them to also be there to support them if they did have a loss. I also think it's a little bit arbitrary. I mean, the risk of miscarriage does gradually decrease each week of pregnancy, but there's kind of no magic number where miscarriage won't occur anymore. So, no, even physically it doesn't really have a strong basis.
So if you do know someone going through this, What can you do to help?
Some of the common things women say, and certainly that came up in our research, are that people really want the loss to be acknowledged and they want people to be able to listen to them without minimising the experience or judging them. They also find practical support helpful at times. You know, cooking a meal, doing something like that can be really helpful. And I think the main thing is, you know, making sure that you're not avoiding them or avoiding saying anything.
Are there certain things that come up in your work that you hear that, you know, you probably shouldn't say, like stuff that maybe isn't intentional but unintentionally minimises people's experiences?
Yeah, I think people are generally very well-meaning and in general they often don't know what to say. But some things I would try to avoid saying, anything where you're putting a just or an only in front of the miscarriage. So, you know, at least you were only early in pregnancy. And I would take the person's lead. If someone is sharing with you that they've experienced a miscarriage, you know, I would take their lead on the language they're using and how they're speaking about it.
I'd like to talk, Claire, about how partners fit into all of this. Do you talk to partners as well? What can the experience be like for them?
Yeah, so I think miscarriage can be really difficult for partners as well. I mean, it's their baby too, but it is something that's spoken about a lot less. And certainly from a medical perspective, you know, partners are often treated almost as irrelevant in that context, which can be really difficult and means they often don't have a lot of information or support that's tailored to them. You know, again, in some of the research Miscarriage Australia has done, that is one of the things men say, is that they often do feel really isolated and that there's no one to talk to really about their experience.
Claire, can pregnancy loss have a lasting impact on how someone feels about falling pregnant again?
Absolutely. I think as soon as someone experiences a miscarriage, they lose that kind of naive excitement that other people can have when they find out they're pregnant. I think that is another loss.
And does talking about it help? Like in your work, do you see that people find a way to really live with that grief?
Well, I guess like all grief over time, people do find a way to live with it, even though it doesn't go away. I think talking about it in some way is really important, whether it is with a professional or with friends and family or both.
There would be people listening right now, Claire, who are really grateful to hear some of this advice from you, and we really appreciate it too. Claire Bellhouse, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Thank you.
And yeah, hearing from you on the text line, someone saying, I miscarried our second baby, and it's still a loss we think about to this day, a loss I didn't grieve or even really understand how to. Talking with other people who had been through similar situations helped for sure. It's a strange and very isolating loss that always stays with you and makes you, yeah, wonder what if. Georgia in Harvey Bay says, I lost a pregnancy that I didn't even know about. I labored at work all day, and then the fetus dropped into my underwear as I was walking out the door. I took the remains to my GP and, yeah, started receiving some help from there. And look, if you do need to talk to someone about this, help is available through Red Nose Australia on 1300 308 307, or you can visit pinkelephants.org.au. And I just, yeah, want to say thank you to everyone for sharing their stories. It is a really important thing to talk about. All right, we're going to move on now and talk about the Commonwealth Games.
Hack. It's been a day and a night to remember for the Australians. There's been so many historic moments at the pool, at the track.
On Triple J.
Yeah, it's Commonwealth Games time, and this time around, things are quite different. And that's because it's been a bumpy road to get to this point. You might remember these Commonwealth Games were initially meant to happen here in Australia, in Victoria. But 3 years ago, the Victorian government pulled the pin, saying it was going to cost too much to host the Games. In the end, Glasgow was then chosen as the host, and 7 years of planning had to be crammed into 12 months. And this whole process has raised a lot of questions about if the Commonwealth Games can survive, if it's still relevant anymore. I'd love to know what you think. Are you tuning in or not? I want your thoughts on the Commonwealth Games. 0439 757 555 is the number to text in on. Whatever your views on the games, something you can't deny, Australia has been smashing it.
Hack. Let's get into the games. Australia continues to dominate in Glasgow.
This is some performance from Australia yet again.
It's been a day and a night to remember for the Australians.
It's Lockie Kennedy and Ajayi. Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy. Oh!
I had an absolute blast out there.
She's gone under 11 seconds. The first Australian woman to do so.
Kyle Chalmers. King Kyle's in the water for Australia.
And we've never had an Aussie sprinter like that young man you can see there.
On Triple J.
And thank you to Channel 7 for that audio. Yeah, we've got 35 gold so far. We're well ahead of the competition. And with us to talk about our wins and also to talk about the future of the games in general, we have ABC reporter Jonathan Healy, who is there in Glasgow. Jonathan, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Jonathan, so glad to have you. How has the atmosphere been, especially now Australia has so many gold medal wins?
Yeah, I've heard quite a few people asking what the hell's going on in our country that that we're dominating the way that we are. More than twice as many gold medals than the next best, and almost twice as many overall as the next best medals. So it's a pretty impressive performance from the Aussies. I think people do get sick of watching Australia win, particularly in the pool, but we certainly don't.
And can you talk us through, for people who maybe haven't been tuning in, what have some of the standouts been so far?
Look, the pool's been pretty remarkable. Sam Short and Lani Pallister have all been going for four gold medals in the individual. The relays, they've won every one so far. But I think last night at the athletics track was possibly the standout so far. It was only just hitting the halfway mark of the games, mind you, so there's plenty still to come. But watching Lachlan Kennedy win silver in the 100 metres men's and Tori Lewis about 10 minutes later win bronze in the women's was phenomenal. It was a historic night for Australian sport, and it's been, I guess, a long time coming, or at least it feels that way because the pressure and the hype has been so big on this athletics team. It was a real culmination last night.
A particularly exciting time in Aussie athletics, hey. And there was a lot of talk about the relevance of these games in the lead up because of Victoria dropping out as host. I mean, being there, Jonathan, what's the vibe? Is there still a lot of love for the Commonwealth Games?
I think if it doesn't affect people's lives too much, and that feels a bit like derogatory, but if people can choose whether or not they want to engage with the games, they seem relatively happy. And that's the case here. You can avoid the games in Glasgow if you don't have any interest in them. Otherwise, you can go hang out. And I don't think it's exorbitantly expensive either. There's a lot of families getting around, a lot of older people getting around, particularly at the bowls, I should say.
the bowling's so interesting.
It is. I mean, and it's another one of those sports that maybe we don't watch year round. And then all of a sudden you find yourself getting super invested and figuring out all the rules and whatnot. So, yeah, I think it's been good that people can opt in or out for their own sakes.
And just before we wrap up, Jonathan, I'm keen to know, how are the athletes viewing the Comm Games? Still a really important event in their calendars?
The swimmers, I think a lot of them are saying, look, this is a building block to the Olympics and things like that. Obviously, no Americans, no Russians, French, Chinese swimmers here. So the competition, it does feel a little bit like the Aussies, largely beating up on people out of their league. The athletics is less so. I think this feels like a really good level and a good sort of early test for this generation of the track and field team, competing against a sort of a group of athletes that is right on our level, they're elite athletes, and giving us a chance to test ourselves against them. So, yeah, I think there is definitely a little bit of a split that way. And then for a lot of the other ones, weightlifting and boxing and things like that, this is kind of their pinnacle. You know, it's their chance to get in front of Australian eyeballs and win some medals and get their names on the map. So a lot of them, yeah, this is huge for them. And the joy that you can see on their faces being part of these teams and hanging out with athletes that they maybe never meet. Yeah, it's still incredibly special for a lot of them.
Awesome to get your take and hear what it's like there on the ground in Glasgow. Jonathan Healy, reporter at the ABC. Thank you so much for joining us all the way from Glasgow.
Thanks.
And hearing from you on the text line, you know, do you still care about the Commonwealth Games? Is it still relevant? What does its future look like? Someone's saying surely Victoria could have hosted it, you know, it being a watered-down event. Someone else saying there has to be a Commonwealth Games so Australia can finally dominate. Someone saying Comm Games is definitely still relevant. Look, that is all from me for now for Hack.